Jordan Kell. Jordan Kell felt uneasy as the World Council security team quietly, politely, efficiently moved all the tourists and sightseers off the bridge. At either end of the span, New Mexico Highway Patrol cars were blocking access to the bridge. Cars, buses, and big lumbering cargo trailers were piling up on the roadway in lengthening, simmering lines. Above the Highway Patrol cruisers, giant holographic signs warned, "Bridge temporarily closed." Jordan could see one of the truckers leaning out of his cab, arguing unhappily with one of the troopers. More cars and other trucks were coming up the road and stopping beneath the bright New Mexico sun. Squinting up at the cloudless turquoise sky, Jordan thought, "Our sun isn't as hot as Sirius, but it's still scorching enough to start tempers boiling." He turned to Aditi, his wife, whom he had brought back from Sirius. With an unhappy sigh, he told her, "We'd better cut this visit short." Jordan Kell was a lean welterweight of a man, handsome in a distinguished way, with strong cheekbones, thick silver hair carefully groomed, his equally silver mustache trim and graceful, his steel-gray eyes still capable of sparkling humor despite everything. He wore a short-sleeved white shirt with dark slacks and comfortable suede shoes. Aditi was from New Earth, the solitary planet circling the star Sirius. Fully human, she was slightly taller than Jordan's shoulder. Slim and youthful, with a pert nose, short-clipped hair as red as autumn leaves, and alert, intelligent brown eyes. She wore a simple sleeveless, short-skirted dress of pale green. She was a trifle more than 30 years old. He was nearing his 220th birthday. 160 of those years he had spent in cryonic suspension aboard the spacecraft that had carried him and 11 other men and women across 8 light-years to the star Sirius and its one planet, and then back to Earth again. Physically, somatically, Jordan Kell was not yet 60. He still had the strength and skill to play tennis, sail a racing yacht, compete in a fencing tournament, if he had the time or the inclination. Aditi asked, "Cut our visit short?" Forcing a smile, he said to her, "They are giving us a private viewing, keeping everybody else away from us." Aditi smiled back.
"You're an important person, Jordan."
He cocked his head slightly to one side. "It seems unfair, somehow."
"You are displeased?"
"They're treating us like royalty, keeping us separated from the crowd, the common people."
"We've seen plenty of people," Aditi countered. "The interviews, the news broadcasts."
"All carefully controlled by the World Council's managers. I wanted to show you our world, our people, but they are keeping us in a cocoon."
"It's a very pleasant cocoon," she said, a smile dimpling her cheeks. "Very comfortable."
"Yes, I suppose so." Still, he felt dissatisfied. Aditi said,
"You promised to show me the gorge."
"Yes, I did, didn't I?" He took Aditi by the hand, and together they walked out onto the bridge. It was just as Jordan Kell remembered it, almost. Leaning against the bridge's anti-suicide fence, he looked down. Far below, the river still cut its way through the cliffs as it had for millions of years. The faithful sun still beamed its warmth across the desert scrubland that stretched to the horizon in every direction. But where once sagebrush had perfumed the summer air, and at dusk elk would amble through, browsing, while prairie dogs would pop out of their snug burrows to forage among their antlered neighbors, now the land was covered with the white domes of prefabricated homes and bare concrete streets that formed a grid among them. A new city was growing, on land that had once been held in trust by the Bureau of Land Management. Suddenly, a hawk plunged down from behind him and dove deep into the gorge before swooping up again and heading for the sky. Jordan felt his heart sing. Turning to Aditi, Jordan said, "This is one of my favorite places on Earth." The glare-blocking contact lenses she wore had turned dark, yet he saw the question in her eyes. Pointing down into the gorge, Aditi said,
"There's certainly nothing like this on New Earth."
"Your predecessors built New Earth," Jordan replied. "This old Earth has been shaped by natural forces over billions of years." She arched a brow at him.
It seems to me that you humans have done your share of changing your planet.
True enough, Jordan admitted ruefully. True enough. He looked out at the growing city of gleaming white solar-powered homes. They were being built for the tide of refugees displaced by the global climate shift. To Jordan, they looked like an invading alien army that had come to claim the once-inviolate emptiness. Leaning over the bridge's rail again, he stared down into the gorge and the river glittering far below. Nearly 200 years had passed since he'd last been at this spot, Jordan told himself. So much had happened. So much was changing. Jordan smiled down at the river, sadly. Despite the climate shifts that had drowned seacoasts and flooded cities all over the world, despite the new towns built for the refugees, the Rio Grande still flowed its age-old course from the mountains to the distant Gulf of Mexico, which had grown into an inland sea that was threatening to split North America in two. Age cannot wither her, Jordan quoted to himself, nor custom stale her infinite variety. Not so, he realized. Even the Rio Grande would soon be changed to suit the needs of the people driven from their homes, their lives, by the greenhouse floods. They're going to divert the river to provide aqueducts and drinking water for the newly built cities, so that the newcomers could water the lawns that they were going to plant and flush their toilets. With a shake of his head, Jordan straightened and turned to his wife. Seen enough? He asked.
I suppose so.
Let's go, then. Eyeing the growing line of stopped traffic, he added, before things turn ugly. As if in answer, a car horn bleated angrily from down the line. With Aditi at his side, he started walking back to his car and his responsibilities. He had traveled to a planet circling another star to find her and rebuild his life. Now he had returned to Earth to tell the people of his birth world that there were other intelligent creatures scattered among the stars, and that they all faced an implacable wave of death sweeping through the stars toward them. Jordan turned to one of the security agents that walked a respectful few meters from him and Aditi. Let's get to the airport. We've caused enough bad feelings here. The young man, trim, athletic, wearing an off-white summer-weight jacket and tan chinos, glanced at the line of waiting vehicles. You're an important person, Mr. Kell. They can wait until you're ready to go. I'm sure each one of them feels that he's important, too. The security officer shrugged and said, Yeah, maybe so. Then he sprinted ahead and opened the door of the unmarked sedan they were approaching. Jordan stopped at the parked car and looked up into the bright cloudless sky. He knew that death was racing toward planet Earth at the speed of light. How did it come to this? He asked himself. How can I save them all?